you to follow along as I read the first 10 verses of this passage. And as is our custom, in honor of God's word, would you please stand as I lead in the reading of it. After this, I saw another angel coming down from heaven. He had great authority, and the earth was illuminated by his splendor. With a mighty voice, he shouted, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. She has become a home for demons and a haunt for every evil spirit, a haunt for every unclean and detestable bird. For all the nations have drunk the maddening wine of her adulteries. The kings of the earth committed adultery with her, and the merchants of earth grew rich from her excessive luxuries." Then I heard another voice from heaven say, "Come out of her, my people, so that you will not share in her sins, so that you will not receive any of her plagues. For her sins are piled up to heaven, and God has remembered her crimes. Give back to her as she has given. Pay her back double for what she has done. Mix her a double portion from her own cup. Give her as much torture and grief as the glory and luxury she gave herself. In her heart she boasts, 'I sit as queen. I am not a widow, and I will never mourn.' Therefore, in one day her plagues will overtake her, death, mourning, and famine. She will be consumed by fire, for mighty is the Lord God who judges her. When the kings of the earth who committed adultery with her and shared her luxury see the smoke of her burning, they will weep and mourn over her. Terrified at her torment, they will stand far off and cry, 'Woe, woe, O great city, O Babylon, city of power. In one hour, your doom has come.'" You may be seated. Consider this fair warning that some of the language I will use today is somewhat indelicate. For I have found it very difficult to express what John is expressing without using his language. And his language is earthy. And I also believe very firmly that John's choice of words and the mental pictures that he creates are intentionally shocking. He wants his readers' attention. The book of Revelation, as we have seen over the last number of weeks, even months, is a book of big ideas. It's a book of large pictures. It stands back, as it were, from life so that we can see what life is actually about. We can get it in perspective. It paints the various elements of life in bold relief so that they can be clearly seen. It makes us ask and answer large questions, questions about life and death, questions about who we are, what we are doing, where we are going. The book of Revelation does not just let us get up in the morning, brush our teeth, go to work, take a lunch break, and watch the evening news. It pushes the why and what questions right into our faces. It paints life in big, bold colors and bizarre pictures. It uses startling and exaggerated language to point out what should be obvious to us, but too easily gets lost in the details of life. Author Flannery O'Connor was asked why it was that she created such bizarre characters in her stories, and she replied, "For the nearly blind, you have to draw very large, simple caricatures." John must have thought us nearly blind. Political cartoonists today do the same thing. They exaggerate the physical features of people or places to make it obvious what they are talking about and, most importantly, what they think about what they are talking about. In our day, if a political cartoonist draws a picture of a ferocious bear somehow suspended over some tiny republic, we almost immediately know that's Russia, and probably Russia ready to gobble up some little country such as Chechnya. John uses words to paint a political cartoon. His cartoon is, however, not a bit funny. It is deadly serious. It is a striking commentary on life in the tribulation and on our lives today. And also it communicates a great warning. A warning to John's readers, a warning to us, and a warning to those who will live in the tribulation. Now, before we look at that political cartoon, I want to ask you some questions that I hope that you will keep in mind throughout the sermon that will help you understand why John has painted the pictures that he paints. The questions are these. What in life is most attractive to you? What do you seek from life? What is so important to you in this life that you are giving your time, your energy, and your money to accomplish it? Put a little differently, who are you serving with your life? For you are serving someone. Who are you serving? Not asked, but stated, Joshua, some 3,500 years ago, put it this way. Choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods of your forefathers or the gods of the land in which you are living, but as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. I believe the central question that John is posing with his descriptions in Revelation 17 and 18 is this. Who will you serve with your life? Who are you serving with your life? I believe that that is the question we are to answer, because I believe that the key verse in the entire passage is found in the 18th chapter, the 4th verse. Then I heard another voice from heaven say, come out of her, my people, so that you will not share in her sins, so that you will not receive any of her plagues. Now, whoever she is in that verse, John is saying, you don't want to serve her because of what she does and where she's going. And who is she? That's what this political cartoon that John draws is all about. In chapter 17, he paints a word picture of a great prostitute seated on a blood-red beast, a beast having 7 heads and 10 horns covered with blasphemous names. Now put that cartoon in the Denver Post some Sunday morning, and everyone would truly notice. But what does it mean? What is the picture supposed to communicate? John leaves nothing to chance, because in the 17th chapter, he spells out exactly what those exaggerated caricatures are supposed to represent. And then in chapter 18, he repeats a long poem that the angel tells him, a long poem that describes what happens to her. Now, for those of you who like outlines, here's the way I wish to explain the text today. First of all, who is the prostitute? Secondly, what is her desire? What means does she use to accomplish her desire, her ends? What ultimately happens to her, and how do we respond? First of all, who is this prostitute? Chapter 17, verse 1. One of the 7 angels who had the 7 bowls came and said to me, come, I will show you the punishment of the great prostitute who sits on many waters. Now we're going to get to who that prostitute is in a moment, but first of all, why does John picture her as a prostitute? The word prostitute is often used in the Bible in connection with unfaithfulness to God. Now, the Lord God often referred to his own people this way. He would speak of how he loved them, betrothed them, cared for them, took them into his own home, and yet they forsook him, they chased after other gods, and they gave themselves to others. Isaiah chapter 1. See how the faithful city Jerusalem has become a harlot. She once was full of justice. Righteousness used to dwell in her, but now, murderers. Your rulers are rebels, companions of thieves. They all love bribes and chase after gifts. Oftentimes, in the Old Testament, there are references to cities and even kingdoms using the word prostitute. And time again, you see that the word is not so much a reference to human sexuality as it is to spiritual unfaithfulness to God. Again, I illustrate Nahum chapter 1, an oracle concerning Nineveh. That city, the Lord is a jealous and avenging God. Woe to the city of blood, full of lies, full of plunder, never without victims, all because of the wanton lust of the harlot, alluring, the mistress of sorceries, who enslaved nations by her prostitution. In Isaiah, we find the same kind of language. At the end of 70 years, the Lord will deal with Tyre, another city. She will return to her hire as a prostitute and will ply her trade with all the kingdoms on the face of the earth. This prostitute takes what belongs to God and gives it to another. And again, I emphasize, the issue here is not about sex. It is all about who and what you are giving yourself to. But again, who is this prostitute? John tells us, verse 1 of chapter 17, she sits on many waters. Now, back just a little bit later in the 15th verse, John clearly identifies those waters as the peoples, the multitudes, the nations, and the languages of the earth. The prostitute, apparently, this first piece of evidence, she has control over the whole world, whoever she is. Verse 2, the kings of the earth and the inhabitants of the earth consort with her. This prostitute has dealings with all of the nations of the world. Verse 3, Another piece of evidence. She is sitting on a scarlet beast. Whoever she is again pictured in alliance with the nations of the world. The beast was described for us back in chapter 13, the Antichrist. Now here in chapter 17, we see that she is in alliance with that beast. Verse 4, she is wealthy and powerful. Verse 6, she has killed the saints. This prostitute in Revelation 17 is not reference to a person, but is a reference to a whole way of life, a whole way of thinking about life and acting in the midst of it. She represents, this prostitute does, what other New Testament writers refer to as the world. Many of you have seen these texts before, Romans 12, 2. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this what? This world. 1 John 2:15, do not love the world nor anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For everything in the world, and now he defines it, the cravings of sinful man, the lust of the eyes, and the boasting of what he has and does, comes not from the Father, but from the world. And the world and its desires pass away, but the man who does the will of God lives forever. This prostitute, then, is symbolic of the world's way of thinking and acting without God. But according to John, this prostitute is also symbolic of a city. Verse 18, the woman you saw, in his explanation, the woman you saw is the great city that rules over the kings of the earth. In our own day and age, when sometimes when we say Washington, we mean the United States. In writing, people will refer to Moscow as a euphemism for all of Russia. Today, we will speak of Baghdad. And by it, we mean all of Iraq, Saddam Hussein included. So this prostitute symbolizes the very center of that world-controlling system that will operate during the tribulation. But notice she is also called Babylon. Verse 5. She is called Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of prostitutes and of the abominations of the earth. Why is she called Babylon? Well, 660 or 600 and some years before Christ, Babylon was in actuality a city that was the capital and center of an entire empire that moved into Israel, into Judah, and captured the people of God, took over the capital city, Jerusalem, destroyed the temple, moved the people back to the city, the empire center of Babylon, and put them in exile and in captivity. From that time forward, Babylon was a word that was used synonymously with the enemy. It simply conjured up all that Babylon had done to the people of God, so that even much, much later, Babylon was a euphemism for the enemy. They could call any government, any city, Babylon, and everyone would know exactly what they meant. That's the evil. That's the empire that is against us. That's the force that is against the people of God. And so by the time of the New Testament, even though Babylon had long since gone, that name applied to the enemy of the people of God. In John's day, that name was applied to the empire of Rome. They referred to Rome as Babylon because it represented all of that which was opposed to God's people. So this woman, whoever she is called a prostitute because she leads people away from God. She is called Babylon because she is the evil enemy of God's people. Now, let me attempt to put her and this description in some kind of chronological perspective. Several times over the last few months, you have seen that which is on the screen before you now, I hope. It is. Good. On your left, to represent the Old Testament, that period of time from creation to the time of Christ, the cross representing the years of Christ's life on earth, his death and resurrection and ascension. The now represents that period of time from the apostles all the way down to the present, and we don't know how much into the future, following which comes a period of great tribulation, so Jesus calls it. And at the end of that tribulation, a relatively short period of time, Jesus comes again, the second coming. Jesus establishes a kingdom on this earth called the millennium for 1,000 years, at the end of which God creates the new heavens and the new earth. Now, as we have been studying Revelation, we have noticed that John describes sometimes something that happens during this present age, then he'll jump ahead and describe something that happens much later, then he'll come back and describe something that happens a little earlier. Chapter 13, for example, introduced us to that evil empire that would rule over the entire world during the tribulation. that worldwide governmental religious system would be led by two beasts that we saw in chapter 13, the Antichrist and the false prophet. But chapter 14 jumped ahead to sometime immediately after the second coming of Jesus Christ, where John pictures the people of God as the 144,000 in the presence of God. And then he pictures the harvesting of the earth, the actual second coming of Jesus. But when we get to 15 and 16, as we saw last week, he moves back in time a little bit to describe more fully those last terrible plagues that will occur on the earth just before Jesus comes again. We come to chapter 19, verse 11, and we will have a description there of that second coming. But chapters 17 and 18 that we are looking at today discuss or describe that worldwide government that will be in operation during the tribulation more fully. And particularly, chapter 18 describes its destruction. Now, just one more look at who this prostitute is. Chapter 17, verse 3. There I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast that was covered with blasphemous names and had 7 heads and 10 horns. When we compare this description in chapter 17 with the description we saw back in chapter 13, we recognize that the beast here in 17, just as in 13, is symbolic of that worldwide governmental religious system that will rule the whole world. And the prostitute then is most likely the capital city of that empire. Just as Babylon was the capital of the empire of Babylon, so this prostitute is the capital of this entire empire. She is the center of this evil government. And what is her desire? Chapter 17, verse 6. I saw that the woman was drunk with the blood of the saints, the blood of those who bore testimony to Jesus. Her desire is to destroy the people of God. Chapter 17, verse 14 tells us she and others will make war against the Lamb. The prostitute, the beast, symbolic of all that whole worldwide empire in the tribulation, together with all of those, the kings of the earth, that they can bring into alliance with them, described as the 10 horns, notice it, the 10 horns you saw are 10 kings who have not yet received a kingdom, but who for 1 hour will receive authority as kings along with the beast, having one purpose. That purpose in verses 13 and 14. One purpose, they will give their power and authority to the beast. They will make war against the Lamb. Now, God has created us to have fellowship with himself, to worship him. The Westminster Confession, the chief end of man is to glorify God and enjoy him forever. And Satan's design from the very beginning has been to thwart that purpose and plan of God. And another way of describing this prostitute's purpose is simply using the word that John uses to describe her, a prostitute. She wants to get people, especially God's people, to use themselves for purposes other than that for which they were created. If she can get them to follow her instead of following God, she wins. She accomplishes her aim. If she can somehow get them to give their lives for anything less than a relationship with God and pursuing God and his kingdom, she wins. And so now we come to the means that she uses to accomplish that end. Her desire is to destroy the people of God, to lead them astray, to take them in different directions. And how does she do it? John clearly gives a lot of ink to this description. Basically, what she does is she offers people a cheap substitute for the real thing. She lures them with temporal riches instead of eternal wealth. She entices them with the immediate but passing power and influence instead of everlasting significance. She offers us life here, now, immediate gratification instead of long-term peace and joy. I want you again to notice chapter 18. When the people of the world are lamenting her downfall, and chapter 18 is a lament, it is a poem, it is a song, when they are lamenting the downfall of Babylon, notice what they miss about her. Verse 3, the merchants of the earth grew rich from her excess of luxuries. Verse 9, the kings of the earth shared her luxury. Verses 12 to 13, I won't read it all, but cargoes of gold and silver and precious stones and pearls and fine linen, purple silk and scarlet cloth, all of the things of the world, that's what she supplied. Verse 15, The merchants who sold these things and gained their wealth from her lamented her demise. Dressed in fine linen, purple and scarlet, glittering with gold, precious stones and pearls, such great wealth. Was there ever a city like this great city? Your merchants were the world's great men. What did they miss about her? What had she lured them with? Affluence and influence. She got them to chase after everything the world has to offer instead of pursuing God. She got them to sell their souls for just a little more education, just a little more money, just a little larger house, a little more power, a little higher position in the company. I don't know how this applies to you, but I ask it this way. With what does the whore seduce you? With what does the prostitute come and say, try this, go this way? What does she offer to lead you away from a life of pursuit of God? What does she suggest to you? What does she promise to you will ultimately give you what you want, not telling you where it actually leads? How does she insinuate herself into your confidence? Is it money? Does she so tantalize you with things that you wind up giving your life for those things? Has she convinced you to put a picture of a Ferrari or some other thing on the front of your refrigerator so that you're reminded every day that's what you are about, that's what you want? Has she made you so fearful of the future that a retirement fund that can handle any emergency has become the driving force of your life, and the concept of trusting God is said but frankly remote? Has she turned your head to other things so that you cannot give without giving grudgingly? With what does she turn your head? Is it not money? Is it prestige? Is it being somebody? Is it being known? Is it getting recognition? Has education for you become not a means of learning, but simply a means of getting ahead? Is the job for you not something you do well and do it to provide a service, but it's simply a vehicle to get you promoted, to get you recognized, to get you ahead, especially ahead of others? You see, if this prostitute can offer enough of the world that we begin to think we don't need God, then she has us hooked. She has pulled us away. Babylon was a great place to live. It offered a lot. Sleeping with the whore isn't all that bad until you realize where it gets you and what it is she's truly offering. Author Eugene Peterson, using the same earthy language of John, describes the deception that she offers this way. The terrible thing about the whore is not that she takes strangers to bed with her, but that once getting them there, she uses her body to lie about life. There is no joining of lives, only of bodies. The exploration and development of our unique human identity, of which sex is the physical means, is replaced by elaborate and deceiving fantasies. A fundamental impoverishment of person is accomplished behind a seductive spell of perfumes, silks, and flatteries. Whoredom uses sex to lie about life. The truth of life is that love is a gift, that relationships are commitments, that sexuality is the sacrament of human spirituality. The whore's lie is that love is purchased, that relationships are deals, that sexuality is appetite. Whoredom is the use of the good to do evil, the use of a good body to demean the person, the use of the means of realizing our identity to depersonalize identities. The great wrong in whoredom is not sexual immorality, although it is that, but it is spiritual sacrilege. The great prostitute takes the good things of life and uses them to turn our heads, to turn away from God, to get our focus on ourselves instead of on Him. Again, I ask the question, what are you pursuing in life? And have you gone into the whorehouse of the world's values to find it? Or have you gone into God's house? Do you seek fulfillment in life in the arms of the great prostitute? Or do you seek it in the arms of God? The prostitute, the world, seduces with the allure of power and wealth, influence, affluence. But John said, I want you to know what happens to her. I want you to see very clearly that if you follow her, this is where it goes. Now, John has already described for us back in chapter 14 something of the end of that world system. He spoke of it as when Christ comes again, it will be like someone taking a great sigh and cutting the grapes from the vines, and they're thrown into the winepress of God's fury. And those who pledge their allegiance to that world system and that world's ways will forever be punished. And what we have in chapter 18 is a funeral dirge. It's a long song, very much of the kind that Moses and Miriam sang after the Egyptians were drowned in the Red Sea. So here in chapter 18 is this long song, a song lamenting the greatness of the fall of the great prostitute. Verse 2, she has become a home for demons. 7, torture and grief. 8, therefore in one day her plagues will overtake her. She will be consumed by fire. What we have in chapter 18 is the lament of political leaders, kings. We have the lament of businessmen, of the merchants of that day. And we have the lament of those who pervade her stuff around the world. And they all in one accord stand back and say, whoa, look what has happened. Look how quickly she has fallen. When the kings of the earth, verse 9, who have committed adultery with her and have shared her luxury, see the smoke of her burning, they will weep and mourn over her. Terrified at her torment, they will stand afar off. In one hour, your doom has come. 21. Then a mighty angel picked up a boulder the size of a large millstone and threw it into the sea and said, with such violence, the great city of Babylon will be thrown down, never to be found again. Now, what John is doing is using the strongest language imaginable to simply say, the prostitute is going down. She may have all the appearance of strength and affluence and wealth. She may appear to be able to offer exactly what it is you want so very much, but she's going down. She offers a counterfeit life, but her destruction is very real. And so John's warning, lastly, is very, very urgent. Verse 4 of chapter 18, come out of her so that you will not share in her sins or receive any of her plagues. Two reasons. One, so you won't fall for her ways. Number 2, so you won't reap her consequences. John in chapter 17 and 18 is describing what that worldwide government religious system led by the Antichrist will be like in that day of tribulation. But he is also describing what that world system is like even today. For according to John, in one of the epistles, he said that the spirit of Antichrist is not only yet to come, but even now is already in the world. And though this seductive lure of the prostitute, Babylon, will be greatest, will be most powerful during those days just before Jesus comes again, we today are faced with the same deceits of the prostitute. The lies that she offers that says, this is life, when it's not. Are you pursuing God, or are you pursuing the prostitute? Again with Joshua, choose you this day whom you will serve. Whether the gods of your forefathers or the gods of the land in which we are living. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. Stand with me, please, in prayer.